It's the Criterion. It's the Criterion. 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 And Project.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Criterion Project. This is a show where we like to talk about a film that is on the Criterion channel right now. It's a lot of fun. I'm film critic Rachel Wagner. Conrado is here.
Yes, he is. Hello, Rachel.
Yes, and we're very excited today. We have a special guest joining us. We have our good friend Katie Carter is here. And Katie, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
And you have been on Rachel's Reviews before for my film, female film critics segment that I do. But you haven't ever been on the Criterion Project. So why don't you introduce yourself to our audience?
Yeah, so I have been writing movie reviews for over 12 years now. For the past almost 5 years, I've been writing for my personal blog, katieatthemovies.com. I primarily cover current releases, but I'm also a really big fan of classic films and old Hollywood. So I occasionally cover that too. And yeah, that's kind of what I'm doing at the moment.
Well, you're a big TCM fan, correct?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah. And that's why I thought to ask you on, because we are talking about Bells Are Ringing this week on the Criterion Project. They have a Judy Holliday collection, and part of it is Bells Are Ringing, and you had watched it on Turner Classic Movies. I saw you tweeting about it, so that's what I thought to invite you on.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I've been a fan of old movies and TCM for so long, and musicals especially, but I really only just became aware of Bells Are Ringing over the last year with quarantine and everything. I really found myself kind of delving harder into older films, and I would occasionally see people talking about this movie, and everybody just had the most glowing things to say about it. So I was like, okay, next time this is on TV, I need to watch it. And I did, and it's so wonderful. I love it so much.
So good. I love it too. So, well, we like to start out by talking about what we've been watching, whether on the Criterion channel or just something else we feel like it's worthy of talking about. What about you, Conrado? What have you been watching?
So I've had a pretty crazy week in terms of just other stuff that I'm doing and work and that kind of thing. But watching Bells Are Ringing reminded me of a TV show, actually, that I love. It's not the most Criterion-y TV show ever, but I think that not a lot of people have watched it, and I recommend it to everyone that hasn't yet, which is the show Bunheads. I don't know if you guys have heard about this show, in which Sutton Foster plays a kind of like a woman who's like a showgirl at Vegas who marries a guy, and then the guy dies right after, and she ends up going to his little town in California where his mother lives, and she runs a ballet studio. So she kind of becomes a teacher at the ballet studio of this, you know, teenage girls. And it's kind of one, it's by Amy Sherman-Palladino, who did Gilmore Girls, and I guess now she's doing Mrs. Maisel. And It is a wonderful, funny, very, very funny show. I think it's her best show, but it was also an ABC Family, and it didn't have such good ratings, so it only lasted for one season. But it's a great, great season of television. It's one of my favorites, and there is a great episode in which they sing the song It's a Perfect Relationship from Bells Are Ringing, which is one of my favorite scenes of the whole show, in which one of the girls is trying to audition for the high school play, and they're doing Bells Are Ringing, and Sutton Foster coaches her through the song. So that made me think of it and remind me how much I love that show. So I would recommend it. I think, Rachel, you would like it if you haven't seen it. And Katie,
yeah, I love it.
I don't know you so well, we just met, but I feel like you would like it too.
I think I would too. I've heard of it, but I've never seen it. But I do really like Sutton Foster. I kind of forgot that she was in that, so I'll have to remember to check it out.
Yeah, it's a delightful show. I really recommend it to anyone who likes, you know, that kind of show, like teenage romance and musical and dancing. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, and Kelly Bishop is just the best, I think. She's so good.
That's right. Kelly Bishop plays the mom, and she's so good, yeah.
She's the best part of Gilmore Girls, in my opinion.
I think I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a very good recommendation. So I have been super busy the last little bit. I have been covering both the Annecy and Tribeca film festivals. It's been a lot. The Tribeca Film Festival has been kind of a mess as far as their organization and everything. And it kind of feels like, as far as virtual film festivals, it feels like Sundance set the bar so high because it was so well done. I mean, they literally thought of everything. They even sent out VR sets for the panelists so that they could feel like they were part of the panel, the virtual, you know, these panels. I mean, they did a great job. And then it's like South by Southwest did, and they also had, Sundance also had really great content. And then South by Southwest wasn't quite as well organized, wasn't quite as good a content. And then it just seems like here, it's just everything's getting kind of worse and worse. And I don't know what the problem is, but especially with narratives, it has been not great. But there have been a bunch of these like celebrity documentaries, kind of bio docs, that have been good. But I enjoyed watching one called Clay Dream about Will Vinton and the Will Vinton Animation Studios, which has now become Leica. And that's all kind of explored what happened when Phil Lord sued Will Vinton. Then his, you know, son Travis Knight became the CEO of Leica. And anyway, it's pretty interesting. Will Vinton's an interesting character, and he, you know, is famous for his claymation. If you like animation like I do, then you should check it out. Clay Dream. And learn more about Will Vinton.
Yeah, that sounds interesting because I do really like Leica, the studio, and what they do, and especially all their innovation in the way that they animate and in the way that they use the mix of computer effects with stop motion animation, which is my favorite kind of animation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and 3D printers was a big breakthrough for Leica. Mm-hmm. That really changed their animation from you know, Corpse Bride and Nine Before Christmas and those things that before they were officially Leica, but when they got to things like Coraline and Paranorman and things like that, is that they were able to have the 3D printers help them make all the faces and different things like that. So yeah, it's an interesting. They also had the Anthony Bourdain documentary called Roadrunner, which it's not like it broke the mold as far as how that kind of documentary is done, but it was very well done and, you know, kind of bittersweet. So that one's I'd recommend as well.
Yeah. I don't know if I can think of any kind of, like you said, celebrity bio documentary that really breaks the mold. I don't know. You see more of those than I do, though. Maybe you have a better idea.
I can't think of... I'm trying to think of any that are like celebrities, but there's some that are like Dick Johnson is dead.
Oh, that's right.
You know, kind of a thing, maybe not a celebrity, but yeah.
Yeah, I would think of that feel like kind of biographical to the directors, which we've talked about Agnes Varda and her, you know, documentaries, and Dick Johnson is dead. And, you know, there's like some Iranian movies that do that as well.
Yeah, that's true. So what about you, Katie? What have you been watching?
Oh, gosh. Well, on the Criterion Channel right now, they have a collection of movies from director Mitchell Leeson, who was a director in Hollywood, mainly in like the 30s and 40s, but he isn't super well known today. And they had a movie in that collection that I've been wanting to see for a long time called Murder at the Vanities. So I finally got to watch that. And it was really weird. It is from 1934. It's a pre-code musical. And pre-code Hollywood is actually my favorite era of film. It's that time between the start of sound movies and about midway through 1934, when the production code really wasn't being enforced, so content was able to be more violent, more risque. They were able to get away with a lot more. So I just think that time period is really fascinating, and this movie definitely I think is representative of that time. There's a music number in it called Sweet Marijuana, where this singer is singing all about marijuana and how it's going to like help relieve her stress after her lover left her. And there's all these like half naked chorus girls sitting in flowers, and it's just very strange, but I don't think it's a good movie, but it's very, very interesting. I think when people think of the 30s, they don't normally think of content like that. So I think if you're interested in pre-code movies and kind of what they were like, it's definitely emblematic of that time. So that was fun. And then also, the UCLA Film and Television Archive has been doing a lot of virtual screenings in their virtual cinema. And a lot of them are free. So if you just go to their website and find the virtual cinema, they just have these movies on like Vimeo to watch for a certain amount of time. So a few days ago, I watched a movie from 1935 called Wenga. And it was also really interesting. I think it's kind of problematic, but fascinating at the same time. It stars Freddie Washington, who was a Black actress best known for her role in the original Imitation of Life. And she plays this character who is this voodoo priestess who gets revenge on this white plantation owner who spurns her for a white woman. And there's a lot of interesting conversations about her struggling with her Blackness. She's a very light-skinned Black woman, and it was just a fascinating movie. It's on there, I think, until June 24th, so you have maybe like a week to watch that. But it's a really rare movie. I haven't seen it playing around a lot, so it was really cool to be able to watch that, and it was accompanied by a discussion with a couple of professors from UCLA that added a lot of context. So, yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Never heard that they're doing that. That's cool.
That's really cool. Could you repeat the name of the movies?
Yes. Yeah, so Wenga is spelled O-U-A-N-G-A. Mm-hmm. And then the movie on Criterion Channel was Murder at the Vanities.
Great. So now you know, people.
Yes. All right. Well, let's talk about Bells Are Ringing. So this movie came out in 1960 and it's directed by Vincent Minnelli, and it stars Judy Holliday and Dean Martin. And it was based on the Broadway play of the same name that was written by Betty Comden, Adolph Green, and Jewel Stein. And it is about a woman named Ella Peterson who works for a company called Sue's Answer Phone that is an answering service in the 1950s, 60s. And she gets too involved in her clients, I guess you'd say, and particularly a man who is a writer who feels lost his partner well, that doesn't, that sounds weird, that his partner went and did other things. And so he is struggling writing on his own. And so she becomes very invested and she kind of falls in love with him, and but she's not supposed to. So all things get kind of crazy. And yeah, it's just, in my opinion, a lot of fun. I think it has some really banger songs. And and I think that it's one of those roles where you can really feel that this is a performer who has done this part hundreds of times, which she did, and that it's kind of in her bones. And I always like that, whether it's Yul Brynner and King and I, or you know, Topol and Fiddler on the Roof, or you know, just these great Broadway performances, that when they get a chance to be the roles in movies, you can just kind of feel that that kind of performance, I think is great. Is this the first time you had seen this, Conrado?
Yes, it was. It was the first time.
Mm-hmm. What do you think overall?
Yeah, so I think I'm in the awkward position of having to be the negative Nancy a little bit, I think, in this episode. I didn't dislike the movie, but I was a little bit disappointed. Maybe I went into it with too high expectations. I actually didn't know Judy Holliday. I hadn't seen any of her movies before, so I liked her quite a bit. I thought that she was a great screen presence, like you said, a good singer, and a, you know, a fun lead. I don't know. I thought that the as a musical, I thought the movie was maybe not at its best when it was being a musical. The musical numbers weren't my favorites. I liked the more the kind of romance comedy scenes a little bit better. But maybe I was just going in expecting, because it's by director Vincente Minnelli, who's made such great musicals, you know, and especially great dance sequences like in American in Paris, or The Bandwagon with Fred Astaire. So maybe I was just didn't know the material that well. I was expecting to see some of those incredible things, and then this was something a little bit different. But I don't know. I'm interested to hear what you guys have to say though.
What did you think about it, Katie, on the rewatch?
I actually loved it even more watching it again. So I just love this movie. I think I do have to wonder regarding the music numbers, like what was cut out of the movie from the Broadway show, because I know that there were more songs in the Broadway version, as there usually are. And the songs are good. I don't think, like, I don't know the names of any of the songs, actually. Like, I can point to different moments in the film, but I don't really remember them. But I just think that Judy Holliday is so effortlessly charming and relatable that she kind of overwhelms anything that might be a little bit more mediocre in terms of a movie musical. And going off of what you said, Rachel, about her being so natural in this role, having played it on Broadway, and I think she won the Tony for this too.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Yeah. Compton and Green actually wrote this role with her in mind. She was going through, they had been good friends for a very long time, and she was kind of going through a rough patch personally in the mid 50s. So they wrote this kind of idealized version of herself to cheer her up. So I think that that's a big reason why she's so captivating, is she is playing a version of herself. And she's just so good-hearted and selfless. She spends this whole movie like trying to just help other people. It's just such a happy experience. And when you get to the end of the movie and she gets her happy ending too, it's just so satisfying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too. I love Judy Holliday. I think she's great. She, of course, won an Oscar for Born Yesterday. It was a interesting year at the Oscars because it was the year of
All About Eve.
All About Eve.
And Sunset Boulevard.
Yeah. Yeah, and they split the vote because they had the same category with Bette Davis and Ann Baxter and Judy Holliday. Not that, I mean, she's great in Born Yesterday, so not that it's not deserving. So, you know, and that was something that she also had been in the stage production of, and then was in the movie. So she had a tradition of that. And I don't know, I often disagree with Conrado on music, but I love the songs in this. Particularly, I think the standout is, well, it's great when she does The Party's Over. That's probably the most famous song that you get in like Broadway anthologies and different things like that. Mm-hmm. I think I'd heard of that song even before I had heard of the musical. But then also I'm Going Back, I think is my second favorite moment. And that really feels like a Broadway number. It feels like she's on stage, you know? And yeah,
a lot of them do. I will agree with you on that, and maybe this is just what I, not what I was expecting and what I necessarily wanted personally, but it does feel very much like seeing someone on stage do a song on Broadway, you know. I guess maybe because it was a movie, I was expecting them there to be a little extra, a little more to the staging of the songs. But this gave me a you know, because a lot of the songs, and she's really great at it, it's just Judy Holliday, you know, stands there and she sings and she does wonderful. I wonder if for me it works better on stage than on screen.
Maybe, yeah, maybe. They, not too long ago, they had a revival, I think it was in 2010, with Faith Prince, who's amazing, in the lead. I also, I enjoyed Jean Stapleton. She's always funny. I mean, I love her all the way down to You've Got Mail. She's so good in that. And, I think if I was going to admit to any weakness in this film, I would say that I think the chemistry isn't like great between Dean Martin and Judy Holliday. It's okay, but it's not the best, but it's not so bad that I can't enjoy it. But I don't know. What do you think about that, Katie?
Yeah, I mean, I sometimes have mixed feelings about Dean Martin and his movie roles. I think this, some of his later roles, especially like with the Rat Pack, watching them today, his characters are just really misogynistic and kind of annoying. But I think this movie kind of came in between those later films and his comedy partnership with Jerry Lewis. And he kind of gets to, it's kind of like a cross of those two personas, I feel like. I think he's really funny and charming just enough and laid back, but he's not the main character. I think he always is in support of Judy. So even though there are some unlikable aspects to his character, some of which she does call out when she first meets him, which is great. I think... I actually do like him in this movie a lot, and I like them together. I don't know. I think especially that first duet that they do, again, I can't remember the name of the song, but when they're singing like something about it's like a dream.
Better than a dream.
Yes. Yes. I love that duet so much.
Yeah. I like that duet a lot too. I think that might be one of my favorite sequences in the movie, musical sequences for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's just he says you're the only honest person I've met in my whole life. And I like also that she picked Melisandre as her name. Like that just seems like the kind of fake name.
Yes.
It's kind of just reminds me of like Anne Shirley, please call me Cordelia kind of
thing. Yeah, so pretentious.
And I also loved how she's like kind of turned on by the fact that he says, are you psychic? You're like, oh, well, yes.
I also think there is something about, for me, about the MGM musicals of around that time. You know, this was when producer Arthur Freed was running the musical unit at MGM, and they do these like, I don't know, it's not just that they're luscious and big, because this movie, I mean, it takes place mostly in like a couple different locations, in like an office and then an apartment and a party and that kind of thing, but the art direction and the production design really makes it feel kind of beautiful and otherworldly. It's almost like a like living in an alternate universe, you know, like almost in like a dollhouse version of Manhattan, I guess, in this case. But I really love that look, which, you know, you can see it in the other movies like American in Paris, like you said, or like Singing in the Rain and things like that. It's that kind of big studio art direction, costume design, production value that makes it feel like real classic Hollywood magic to me, which even when I don't love the movie, I really, really appreciate the vibe of that and just like seeing these beautiful images.
Yeah, it definitely has that spectacle.
Yeah, it's like an idealized version of Manhattan in the late 50s, I feel like. But then, I mean, we have the glamour, but then I also love how Suzanne Cerfone is housed in like this crumbling basement apartment. It's just such a contrast to the other locations in the movie, especially when we go into like Dean Martin's world and his like posh apartment, and then the big party with all the glamorous people. It's just kind of funny to me, especially like the movie opens with that fake advertisement for Suzanne Cerfone, and it makes it seem like this really like high-end service, and then we cut to like this like messy basement that they're working out of. I just love that.
Yeah, definitely. And he even says that at the end, he's like, what is this dump? Yeah. And you had mentioned that one of your favorite songs, Conrad, was It's a Perfect Relationship. That's the first song of the whole musical. Mm-hmm. And it is really fun that, you know, that she has the perfect relationship with all of these, with Jeffrey Moss,
Right, perfect relationship. I can't see him, he can't see me. Yep. Yeah. Sounds good to me.
I do love the whole scene when she sneaks into his apartment and she's terrible at it. He sees her right away. And then her trying to think. And I kind of love the fact that she still has the coffee in her purse. Like, I don't know how that wouldn't have spilled, but nevertheless, it's funny. And he's like, do you have a cheese Danish? Oh, I got a prune Danish. And he's like looking at this tiny little purse. Like, what else is in there?
I also really enjoyed the whole thing with the guy who had the record. There was a fake record company that was actually to place bets, and there was the whole thing of like, give me Beethoven's 10th, and there was like, Beethoven only wrote like 9 symphonies. I'm sure they mean 9th. No, they mean 10th.
It's a bookie really system. Yeah, and how hilarious to name your bookie system a fake record company, Titanic Records.
Right.
Might be a little prosaic there. Yeah, it's really good. And she's helping all these people, and one of them is Dr. Kitchell, who's the dentist who dreams of being a songwriter, but he's had to become a dentist for his father. And there's one of the big scenes between her and Jeffrey is when she tells him, nobody's stopping you from doing what you dream in your life, and she tells him about Dr. Kitchell, and she also stops him from going to the races.
Yes.
I also really like the kiss in this, the first kiss in this movie, when she storms out and then storms back in.
So perfect,
right? And it's so good.
Camera kind of like moves over them. It's great.
Yeah, I love that one. And then we have the party scene where they do the drop the name, and I don't know, but there were a lot of names in that song that I have never heard of. These were famous enough people to be like, drop the name, which is kind of interesting.
they were definitely famous at the time.
Right.
I think if you were to do this movie today, it would be interesting to like update that song with current names. I don't know. That might be fun, but
yeah,
I love the song and how, you know, all these other people are shouting all these names of like famous actresses and actors and directors. And Judy Holliday is just keeps saying like Rin Tin Tin, like that's her name drop. So great.
Yeah. Cause they're of course doing like Cary Grant and Cary Cooper and things like that.
Dog actors.
And I also thought it was interesting that song, all of the women who are kissing him in that song are all misses. Which shows what a rake he really is.
That's true.
He proposes in a note, and she leaves, and that's when she sings The Party's Over, which I think is a really good song, and she does a great job with it. Like I said, this was the song that I think was in one of my Broadway anthologies. So I had heard it before I even knew about the show. This is a pretty popular song. And then we have the Midas Touch, and this is, and then he goes all the way out to Brooklyn Heights to find her, because that's what she said was where she lived. And yeah, I love his when he's like, Ma?
Yeah, I think doesn't she kind of try to disguise herself as like an older woman with the blanket and everything?
Yeah. Then when he comes back, she sings I'm Going Back. And I love this song. I think it's so good. It just, it's such a Broadway song, and I'm a big fan of that energy. A little modeling on the side. It's one of my favorites. If not, it might be my favorite song in the show, but
it's good. It's good.
Yeah. It seems like the most, that's like a part of her and who she is. And, he comes. I love the ending. I probably watched the ending way too many times. Like, all this time I thought that Ma was a little old lady. How nice of it to find out that she's a beautiful blonde who knows how to cha-cha. And she has like, that mop on her hair.
Beautiful. Yeah, I love that. That's so good. Scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's go to our questions. So we have, what makes this a Criterion film? And I think that if you're going to have a Judy Holliday collection, you have to have Bells Are Ringing. I mean, it would be ridiculous not to have it.
Yeah. Yes. Well, she didn't really make that many movies either. Yeah. I mean, I think this collection that Criterion has right now has six of her films. I want to say she made like 10 movies. So she had
That's true, because she died at 43.
Yeah, this was her last movie. She was dead 5 years later. So, yeah. But yeah, this is definitely, I think, even though her filmography is unfortunately very small, this is still a major highlight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think, Conrado? You agree?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like I said, I am not super familiar with Judy Holliday's work. This is my first time seeing her, but I understand that she is a big star of stage and screen. And this being her last performance and it being such a good one, and then, you know, you have the kind of Vincente Minnelli element as director, which I do think that he has kind of, at least in some circles, and I think I kind of agree with this, he has been kind of now got the reputation for being like the best kind of musical director of the 50s and 40s and maybe not the 60s, but this is 1960, so, but definitely he feels like the best director of that MGM Arthur Freed unit. So I can see that. He's a very good director of musicals, and this might not be my favorite musical of his, but you know, if you want to have the kind of a tourist thing that Criterion loves to do, then that makes total sense.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And so we have our pretentiousness scale, Katie. We have where 0 is the most crowd pleasing, 10 is your artsy Godard film that no one understands. So I think with this, I think it's like a 0 or 1. I mean, it's, there's nothing like particularly artsy about it. It's very crowd pleasing.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's nothing pretentious about this movie. I even think, I mean, the leading lady isn't even like your typical glamorous leading lady of the time. She's very down to earth and relatable. And yeah, and this is just such a feel-good movie. It's so optimistic. And yeah, I think that it's so easy to fall in love with this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Do you agree, Conrado?
I think so. I think that the highest I would go on the Criterion scale, if I had to, might be like a 2, which is still, you know, really low. And that would just be because I do feel like there is a, especially in the 50s and especially in the 60s, I think there is a bit of a prestigious aura around the musicals. It becomes, you know, they become more, they're based on Broadway shows, which have been hits, and it becomes kind of an event to make movie versions of them. I think that's more so later on in the decade when you get to something like My Fair Lady or The Sound of Music, which really feel like this is supposed to be a big, important movie, musical, you know? This may be a little less so, but I think it's kind of on its way, so maybe I'd give it a 2, but I agree with you, both of you, that it's just a crowd pleaser. Nothing very pretentious about this at all.
Yeah. So our last segment is we talk about remakes. And I think if I was going to remake Bells Are Ringing, I think you got to take the You've Got Mail approach and make it an online story. I think it's hard because there's not really that kind of messaging service in an online format that I could think of. But I think if you could make her a matchmaker, an online matchmaker, maybe that might work. And she ends up getting too involved with the people that she's matching, that you could work in most of the songs, I think, in some way. That was the best I was able to come up with.
Yeah, I was kind of trying to think of the same thing because I can't really picture like a modern, like a contemporary movie of this, but still set in that time period. I don't know. There's something so like distinct about the look and feel of the movie that I just can't picture being able to recapture that. But I don't know. I was almost wondering like if maybe her job was something like a virtual assistant or something for some of these people. And then she would like know their jobs and kind of know a little bit about them. Like she does in the movie as it is, maybe something like that could work.
Yeah. Maybe somebody in like PR maybe.
Yeah.
What you just said, Katie, gave me the idea that it could be like a thing, like it's a Siri type thing where it's like a virtual, that you think it's an AI assistant, but it's actually a bunch of ladies who are in some room talking to you, which I think could be interesting in terms of like, you know, how we interact with computers versus how we interact with humans. I don't know. That could be fun. I was thinking that, have either of you seen the movie Down with Love with Ewan McGregor and Renee Zellweger?
Mm-hmm. I actually have not.
That is a wonderful movie. I love it. And it's done in the style of kind of more like the Doris Day, Rock Hudson movies of the 50s, especially in the design and the clothes and all of that. The only flaw about that movie for me is that it's not a musical. So I think that you bring that aesthetic, make a Bells Are Ringing again, I'm going to go back to what I said at the beginning of the show. Why don't you give the part to Sutton Foster, see what happens. I would definitely go and see it. It would be an old-fashioned, you know, throwback, but I think I'd be into it.
Yeah, I mean, we're in the age of the musical. This is, I mean, this year alone, it's unbelievable, at least to me. Somebody who loves Broadway musicals, not only is Broadway coming back, but we have Dear Evan Hansen, we have In the Heights, we have Encanto and Vivo, both in animation. Tick, Tick, Boom, I'm so excited about that. West Side Story, I'm excited about that. So it's a pretty exciting year for musicals. So if there was ever a time to to do some sort of revival of the old school musicals, this is the moment to do it, that's for sure. So I am looking forward to that. So let us know if you're listening what you would do if you got the assignment to do a remake of Bells Are Ringing. What do you do? I would be curious to know your thoughts. And so that is our discussion on Bells Are Ringing. Thank you so much, Katie, for coming. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. This was fun.
Yeah, so fun. And where can people find you and your content?
Yeah, so you can find my written reviews at katieatthemovies.com. I'm on Instagram at katieatthemovies, and you can also follow me on Twitter at katiel_Carter. And yeah.
Great. And Conrado, how can people find you?
You can find me by going on Twitter and searching at CocoHitsNY.
Great. And you can find me at Rachel's Reviews, all of our social media, iTunes, YouTube, and on Rotten Tomatoes. So check that out. And also make sure you're following us at Criterion Pod on Twitter. We like to have some updates and other things, some discussions going on there. So make sure to follow us there. And thanks so much, everybody. I really enjoyed talking about this musical. And let us know what you've been watching on Criterion Channel. We'll talk to you all later. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Hey, everybody. This is Conrado with a special announcement because, as you might have noticed, we forgot to say what we're going to be doing next time. So, I'm here to tell you, next episode, we're going to be covering Satoshi Kon's Paprika. So, we are coming back to the world of animation with Paprika, which should be coming to the Criterion Channel in July. So, enjoy!